Welcome to the Enabled Disabled Podcast. I'm your host, Gustavo Serafini. I was born with a rare physical disability called PFFD. My journey has been about self-acceptance, persistence, and adaptation. On the show, we'll explore how people experience disability, how the stories we tell ourselves can both enable and disable, how vulnerability is the foundation for strength, and why people with disabilities can contribute more than we imagine. I hope that leaders, companies, clinicians, families, and friends will better understand our capacity to contribute to the world and help enable us to improve it. Kim Tiao is an entrepreneur, restaurant owner, music teacher, and the former assistant director at the Academy of Music for the Blind in California. Kim's perspective on working with children with a disability is insightful. What started out as emotionally challenging transformed into a deep appreciation of human adaptation. The ability to participate and empower children with a disability doesn't just help the children. Turns out it helps the people who work with them too. If you like the podcast so far, please leave us a good review on the podcast platform of your choice and share it with anyone you think would like it as well. It will really, really help us. Thank you. Kim, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Welcome. So I'd love to dig into your experience, the Academy of Music for the Blind. Can you talk a little bit about how you got involved with them and what they do, what they're about?
Yes, most definitely. Thank you for having me on the show. I've always been very intrigued with music, of course, and I was looking for a volunteer opportunity. This was about 4 years back, and I've always enjoyed working with children. So the first, I don't know how I connected the dots on wanting to basically do something that's, pertaining to music and kids. I think the volunteering at, it was actually volunteering at a blind children's learning center here in Orange County. So it's a bit of a preschool. So I started there first, and I thought, that's the least I can do is sing nursery rhyme to kids. And, because I'm not exactly a trained teacher, but I've always wanted to be a teacher. So I started there first, and because I've learned my music without using much vision, definitely, heavily using just my ears. So that's why I thought, okay, this could be a good way to impart my knowledge on music to blind children, because that's pretty much how I learn music. I don't read notes, or I've never taken lessons. So that's how I started with Blind Children Learning Center, and then going forth from there, the opportunity with Academy of Music for the Blind opened up, and it definitely, led me there.
Gotcha. So you're a self-taught musician, and what,
correct,
can you talk a little bit about your experience at the preschool, what that was like, what were kind of some of your key takeaways from it?
So yes, definitely. It was a very unique experience because, first of all, it was my first experience in a actual school setting, working with children and working with particularly, it was a blind children learning center. So that itself was very overwhelmingly challenging, I would say. However, it was challenging at the same time rewarding, because I felt like when I was there volunteering and singing during what they call their their music time for 30 minutes, you know, the children would sort of gather in a circle in the hall. And this is my, you know, opportunity to get them involved in singing nursery rhymes like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, Wheels on the Bus, things like that. But I really saw them light up. And I think that was, you know, it brought me tremendous joy. And that motivated me to overcome whatever challenges that I had working one-on-one with blind children as well. So that's you know, in a nutshell, that was that experience.
And so can you talk a little bit about some of those challenges? I heard your interview with Faye on her podcast, which was great. And I know you said that you were a little bit overwhelmed at first, but then eventually you started to see what your impact and started to see what the children were capable of doing as you got used to it and as you got more involved. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I think one of the main challenges was to really understand the non-visual world. So, you know, for me, being a sighted person, I rely heavily on vision. So in order to impart a certain, that part of knowledge, you know, I had to sort of put myself in these children's shoes and, you know, for example, teaching them the ukulele instead of, you know, just pointing, you know, put your finger here. It's more of actually describing where the frets are, which string. So often just adapting to using a lot of narratives in my description. So that was, you know, and one of the challenges I had to overcome instead of, you know, just using commonly when you're with younger kids, oh, look at that, look at this. I would often have to sort of describe things much more, you know, and that sort of evolved me as a teacher is just finding a way to teach differently because my students are seeing differently. It's not that they don't see, they just see differently. So
you taught music at the academy as well?
Correct. So at the Blind Children Learning Center, it was very, it was more of just me singing to the kids and maybe just introducing the instrument. There wasn't the opportunity to sit down and say, have a lesson, you know, teach them chords and things like that, because that was the extent of my responsibility as a volunteer. So where it led me to the academy, because I met a incredibly talented student at the Blind Children Learning Center. His name was Nathan, and he was 5 years old at the time. And I felt like, you know, on my own free time, I visited him in his home and taught him what I knew about the piano, the ukulele. And I just felt like this child is a sponge ready to absorb more and more and more. However, I ran out of things to teach him because he was such a fast learner and he was so brilliant that I felt, you know, he needs somewhere. He needs a place that he can go to and comfortably, you know, learn the way that he learns. Because if it was just a regular, if he had just gone to regular piano lessons with a regular sighted teacher that's used to teaching sighted children, I think that would be a bit frustrating for him and for both parties. So I felt like, you know, that was the calling, is to search for a school, particularly for this child that was so talented that I felt he deserved, you know, the opportunity to learn and to keep growing. So I searched the internet and stumbled upon Academy of Music for the Blind. And the director is Mr. David Pinto. He founded, you know, the institution. And he was a brilliant musician that worked with famous musicians such as Ray Charles. So I was intrigued with his organization. So I reached out to him and took it upon myself to actually bring this talented five-year-old boy, Nathan, to this institution, you know, along with his parents, to sort of see if he's a good fit. And you know, of course, amazingly, he was. And he was basically, this institution serves students like him, where they're not, you know, they're the main goal of Academy of Music for the Blind is to develop, you know, not just one instrument, multiple instruments, and also just develop this knowledge of music and expertise in music as much as we can in an environment that is, you know, that encourages learning with non-sighted children. So yeah, that's pretty much that history of that.
That's an amazing story that you actually, you know, you took several extra steps beyond what most people would do to help Nathan. And then you found yourself in this whole new world in this academy. So the academy, I'm assuming you have to apply and they're only looking for children who have some musical ability, correct?
Correct. So typically it's more of assessing that they have the ability to learn. So they may not, you know, let's say a four-year-old or five-year-old child who goes in there may not be pitch perfect, or, you know, may not necessarily already be as talented as someone like Nathan, because sometimes you just don't know. But as long as they have the interest in music and the ability to learn, because sometimes visually impaired or blind children come with other disabilities that may be much more of a hindrance, you know, autism or what other disabilities that may be much more of a learning hindrance. So usually Mr. David Pinto would assess them and make sure that, you know, they are a good fit. And it's only held on Saturdays. This academy was, it only runs on Saturdays, and it's sort of a intense 5-hour music camp. So these children have to be able to follow this kind of structure and, you know, be on one-on-one with different teachers. So that's, yeah. So I mean, it literally is an academy, you know, the word academy is pretty much befitting of it, because it's like you go in and it's class after class, one-on-one, some are group classes. And it's just so much learning. And these kids have to be able to be okay with that, you know?
And are they given, like, you know, homework assignments, practice routines so that they can, what's the, you know, are they given opportunities to perform during the year? How do you incentivize the kids to learn besides just natural curiosity?
Absolutely. So, so yes, Mr. David Pinto is a professional musician, and so he is all about gearing the students up for performance. And that's what, you know, that's sort of the payoff for these students to learn pieces and grow in their musical journey. They do get opportunities to perform at events. We get invited to some charity events, and Academy of Music for the Blind as well. We host at least one or two fundraising events a year to raise funds for the scholarship for this academy, because we do hire professional musicians to be teachers, because it's a paid gig for them, you know, ensuring that there's that level of commitment. And since this is a nonprofit organization, a lot of it comes from, you know, donations and grants. So the students are definitely honed and geared towards performance. And thankfully, also, we have this sort of YouTube platform. So sometimes we would record the students every week for the lessons. Every Saturday, we would have what we call share time, which is 30 minutes of performance time opportunity for the kids to show their progress. So this is also, you know, we do sometimes record these and put them on YouTube so that the students themselves can kind of, you know, gauge their progress and enjoy, you know, the rewards of their work, their hard work.
Something that I'm curious about is, did you find that the kids pick up certain instruments easier? Like I would imagine for someone who's visually impaired, playing a stringed instrument would be easier because they can feel the whole instrument. They don't have to kind of memorize, for example, in a piano, where all the keys are. Did you see it? Is that correct?
I think there's certain truth to that. I think ultimately every instrument, and of course, everything is by feel. It's really learning for our students at the Academy of Music for the Blind. It's more of them adapting, you know, their fingers, let's say, to the piano. So it's more of distance between keys. Same thing with string instruments, you know, distance between frets. So I'm not necessarily, you know, certain that it's one instrument easier than another. I think every instrument requires that kind of adaptation. You know, something like a drum set or bongo, everything is about the student learning the shape of it via feel and touch. And then the distance, you know, of the distance and sort of how their, you know, dexterity of their hands on even a wind instrument. So I think every instrument comes with its own challenges. I will say the instrument that I teach, ukulele, would probably be the easiest instrument. It's almost like recorder is the easiest instrument for wind. Ukulele would be the easiest instrument for string because it's only 4 strings, so it's not difficult to master it.
Interesting.
Right. So yeah, it's also aside from instruments at the Academy of Music for the Blind, we actually also focus, of course, on choir, vocals, and we also introduce dance to sort of get the students, you know, working on their balance, posture, and when they're performing, you know, how they need to portray themselves to our sighted audience.
Yeah, the body awareness thing I can see being something that they have to learn over time, and I'm sure they develop that, correct? It's just a matter of, like you said, adaptation.
Yes, and it helps them in their mobility, confidence. So I think it really is, and to me, I feel like this academy, although we focus heavily on music, I really think it grows a blind child wholly, like, you know, to sort of prepare them for the world in a sense.
I can see it giving them confidence. Like I have a physical disability. So for me, the way I kind of imagine it is when you're doing something you like to do and you have a gift at it, you've practiced it, you're sharing it. Not only does it give you confidence, but it's a way to, when people see pretty much anybody, it doesn't have to be with a disability, but when we see other people doing something excellent, we connect with that person. We admire that person. We connect with them on another level. So the disability, it's not just about the disability there. It's about, look at what that person's doing. They're doing something interesting. They're doing something special. I want to connect with that person and get to know them now.
Right. And I was fascinated with, you know, the title of your podcast, Enabling This Able, or
enabled,
correct me if I'm wrong.
Enabled, disabled.
You're right. It's definitely very empowering, and I think that should always be the focus. You know, for a child, you know, that we term them to be disabled, but let's not focus on that. That's just something they have to overcome. Let's let's focus on what they are able to do and shine in those areas. So our students at the Academy of Music for the Blind, you know, obviously their area that we want to hone and grow is music. However, we always, you know, when we take them to perform in communities and things like that, we always also share that it's more than just their talents in music. You know, they can be, they can contribute heavily to the community. They can give. And so music is definitely a way of giving and sharing to the world around them. Often they are faced with people that encounter them that are filled with sympathy, but it's not a positive thing to just accept sympathy. It's more like, you know, let me share with you what I can do to brighten up your day. You know, here, let me sing you a song. Let me share my challenges so that I inspire the people around you. So that's kind of what we like to focus at the Academy. And I think it's definitely impacted my life. You know, because we often, even as regular functioning human beings, often get bogged down. So that is a disability, right? I mean, when we get bogged down, our emotions or things like that, we get often, it's so negative that we have to share more of this positive energy around, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So, and when the students at this academy, I think the academy has been around for what, 8 years now?
Well, it's about 15 years at this point.
15 years. Wow. Okay. Yes. Has there been enough time where, you know, one of the students or maybe more of the students have actually become professional musicians, or is it too soon for that?
There has been several that have graduated and become professional musicians, performing musicians. It's a very, very small school. So I came in at the tail end. I can't remember some of the names of the students that have gone on, but they've sort of made a career out of it. I know some students that have also become private music teachers to others. So it's definitely something that, you know, will help them in their future career if they decide to go into music. It definitely lays a very strong foundation for them. But like I said, I think it prepares them for the world, you know, out there.
Absolutely. If it, like you said, it gives them the confidence that they can be good at something. So if you can be good at one thing, why can't you apply yourself and adapt and be good at something else?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Has the Academy tried? I know obviously Ray Charles is a huge name, but I know, you know, a lot of people know Bocelli. I think Melody Gardot is another blind singer. Has the Academy, you know, tried to maybe get more artists who have a disability over there to maybe help teach the kids, inspire the kids, perform for the kids?
We've definitely reached out to these organizations, you know, like Stevie Wonder and so the thing about so we've reached out because I was involved in the I was the assistant director for 4 years and I was also helping with fundraising, but funnily enough, some of these organizations, their causes, someone like I think it's Ray Charles, I believe his cause is towards deaf. The deaf, actually, because he cannot imagine a world without sound. So sometimes it doesn't necessarily mean they may be great role models and mentors, but it's not the easiest to sort of align these successful blind musicians with contributing to our organization. But we've had several, like Justin Coughlin is a famous jazz pianist, and he, you know, he's part of, he works with Quincy Jones and things like that. So he's definitely visited with our students and encouraged them and things like that. Josh Groban, who's not blind, but he's also a foundation that has supported us. So we've definitely reached out as much as we can to successful musicians to sort of encourage, you know, them to help us out in our organization.
So I never thought of that, but that's a very interesting point that you mentioned about Ray Charles. And I wonder something else that Bocelli said that I wanted to ask you about. I think I read it in an interview with him, is that he says he feels lonely on stage, and you'll see him kind of reaching out and trying to, you know, touch the performers around him so that he can feel more connected.
Correct.
You know, is that something that you think is that correct? So a lot of when the students are performing on stage, do you think they have that same sensation?
That definitely, you know, I absolutely think so. I think sometimes it's when you're on stage, and because, you know, you can't see your audience, it's more difficult to feel that connection. So they are definitely more encouraged by, you know, for example, the applause after the performance. But during the performance, I can see that I can completely relate to what Bocelli has said, that feeling of loneliness and wanting to connect with the audience. I can see how that is a very good point, actually.
And what would you say you're still volunteering for the Academy of Music for the Blind, correct?
Well, currently, since COVID, all lessons are online. So, so yes, I'm helping out just in much smaller doses due to the fact that I got involved with opening a restaurant. That was one of a crossroad that I had to face to sort of, you know, delve myself 100% into the restaurant. And so the volunteering had to sort of be on pause, and I had to give that up, you know, which I truly miss.
You know, I think COVID has been difficult for just about everybody. So that's completely understandable. Hopefully, 6 months from now, we'll all be singing to a different tune, right? And we'll be back, you know, running. I have a business too, and it's been challenging. So,
yeah.
Hopefully, we can all get back to normal in the next 6 months and open up full force. So, talk to us a little bit about your restaurant. What was how have you pivoted the restaurant business during COVID?
Right. So my husband and I, we opened a restaurant about 4 years ago. It's called Seasons Kitchen, and it's a Malaysian restaurant. So it's one of the very few Malaysian restaurants here in Southern California. And, you know, it was a brand new business for us. My background is an entrepreneur, but in the retail industry. So this restaurant was more of a labor of love. It was definitely a dream and a passion that my husband and I have to share Malaysian cuisine to the community around us, because it's so unavailable. And because it's a new business, you know, it was completely like a huge learning curve for me how to sort of make it in this industry. So the first year was unimaginably difficult, just sort of establishing ourselves as a restaurant brand, number one, and number two, creating the awareness of Malaysian cuisine. I mean, when you don't know of a cuisine, you don't even crave it because it's not even in your mind. So having that as a huge, that was a monumental task. So one of the ways that we overcame that was to sort of reach out to catering contracts. So we started doing pop-ups at corporate offices, you know, with a partner called FUTA. It's a nationwide partner, but that gave us a lot of exposure. So, you know, so instead of having 50 people come to our restaurant for lunch, we're bringing 50 lunches to their offices. So that was a great exposure. And I think slowly but surely in the second, third year, we started seeing a lot more regulars, a lot more loyal customers. So that, you know, I would say by the third year, we felt safe. Like, okay, I think we can continue to stay afloat and grow our business. And that's when COVID hit. So everything has, you know, I'm sure everything happens for a reason. And I think challenges is what makes us stronger. So with COVID, you know, then we had to go back to the drawing board and say, what now? We can't do, initially was no dine-ins, only deliveries and to-go. So we started reaching out to all our customers and offering our own in-house delivery system to deliver food like that are like, to deliver to customers that are 20, 30 miles away from us. But to do that efficiently, it can't just be one order. We would take a pool order of like 10 customers and do a complete, you know, delivery run in a 2-hour window period. So yeah, that was one of the big ways that we pivoted. The other way that we pivoted was also to set up our online pantry shop, because again, with Malaysian cuisine, it's not such a widely known cuisine that our ingredients are readily available at even Asian markets. So we started importing more of Malaysian sauces, things like our curry paste and things like that. So we expanded our pantry market and put the entire store, we sort of created an online shop through Shopify and reached out again to the entire, you know, Malaysian community across America. And now we're starting to ship things, you know, to our customers. So now our audience became slightly bigger from just our little, you know, 10 mile radius or 15 mile radius. Now we're reaching out to customers all across America. So that helped us make up for some of the losses, obviously losses in not having dine-ins and losses in corporate catering, you know, which we couldn't do due to COVID. So yeah, that was the two ways that that we had pivoted our business to stay afloat.
Interesting. Yeah, I was at your site earlier today. I'm actually going to order some sauces. I've never had Malaysian cuisine and I'm curious to try it. So.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Well, yeah, some of these sauces, they're definitely, you know, they're very easy to use. Basically, you know, all the hard work's been done for you. You just add protein, add water, add coconut milk, and there you have it. You have a Malaysian, you know, dish for dinner. So that's kind of like, we're starting to see that as a now with COVID, everyone's staying home more, becoming home chefs. So we're sort of feeding into that, you know, that demand.
And I read on the site that sometimes, I guess when you were open for dine-in, that you would play a ukulele for the customers.
Right. So my passion for sharing music never stopped, even though, you know, I couldn't carve out as many hours as I wish I could with the academy. I've always loved sharing the joy of ukulele. So actually at the restaurant, we have a wall selling ukulele and some guitars. And when customers come in, you know, when we used to have dine-ins, I would sing for my customers. Or if they had any interest in learning the ukulele, I would just give them free lessons, because really with ukulele, all it takes is like 10 minutes of somebody kind of showing you the basics. And then after that, you can just be sort of a self-learner on YouTube, you know?
Have you thought about when things get back to normal, maybe doing like an event night where some of the academy kids can come in and perform for the for the customers, or maybe doing some special events where you kind of can join up both sides of the restaurant and the academy?
I would absolutely love to do that. In fact, when, you know, I already had some of my students coming in and doing, you know, performing, but because our restaurant's kind of small, so it was never anything that I was able to set up on a larger scale. But I think, you know, I think that's a great idea. Now that we're actually with COVID, we started offering outdoor dining. So for some reason, our restaurant sort of got bigger and we just opened up for indoor dining. So now we have more square footage and it would be great to have, you know, once it's safe again, to have our students come and perform. Absolutely. I think that's a wonderful suggestion.
Yeah, that would be fun, and that definitely put that on YouTube, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
we could all enjoy it. Those of us who can't go to California.
Right. Yes. Very, very good idea. I will definitely put that in the books. You know, always a good, always great to think outside the box too. You know, and combine our passions and livelihood sometimes. You know.
Absolutely. So you sound like a very resilient person, and you know the way you've pivoted and survived with the restaurant. Were you always, you know, you and your family, were you always like that, or you know, do you think you gained something from working with the children? Did you get a deeper appreciation maybe for the powers we all have to adapt and grow and survive?
Oh, I think the students are my biggest inspiration. And I think with the opportunity to serve them and work with them closely, I am absolutely, you know, changed by them. And I think that just seeing what they have to overcome on a daily basis, it's nowhere near any of the challenges I've ever had. So, you know, I think I always look at them as my source of inspiration and strength and a reason to do more and to give more to society, you know, and sometimes stop looking inward and look outward and you know, I think you definitely hit a huge point there, that in giving, in serving them, I was heavily served. So, you know, I was basically blessed tenfold. And I think I will never sort of see the world the same way, you know, just seeing what they have to go through and how strong they are to navigate a visual world without sight.
Yeah, that's true. But I would bet that they feel the same way about you. I'll bet that you've also inspired them and given them confidence and hope. And, you know, I think it's a very symbiotic give and take there.
Yeah, I hope so. I do see that. So that's great. Yeah, we definitely, you know, want to bridge that gap between, you know, the sighted world and non-sighted world, other sort of disabilities, you know, and like you said, enabled, disabled. So we got to try to focus on, you know, we may label somebody as disabled due to some physical condition, but, you know, there's for one disability that might be hundreds and abilities, if there's even a word, abilities, let's just put it that way, abilities that they can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's true. And I think the work that you've done so far is amazing. And I think that it really sheds light on that. And your ability to learn so much from it and to open your mind to it in ways that you didn't think were possible. I think that's what it's all about, is just that journey of opening our minds and telling ourselves different stories about what we're all capable of doing. And so many of the limitations we put on ourselves are self-imposed. They're not really there. Even
correct.
Think-
yeah, yeah, correct. Yeah, absolutely agree with you.
So how can people help support the Academy?
Definitely visit our website to learn more, which is www.ouramb.org. And I think, you know, aside from just monetary donation or connecting us with the right people that would feel, you know, would feel strongly about an organization like this, is just sort of create, just sort of be more aware that you know, organizations like us exist, and that we are definitely trying to do good work to change the lives of these students, because it's not a huge percentage of them that have, you know, this this ability. But we want to, if they do have it, we want them to be in the right place to be able to grow. You know, just like how I found AMB for Nathan, we would like to be able to find more students like Nathan who could benefit from our organization.
And you have a YouTube channel as well?
I do, but I'm not too diligent about keeping up with it. It was really, it's my personal channel that I recorded some of my ukulele lessons for my students so they could use it for practice. But
AMB has a YouTube channel as well. So people can
subscribe
and, you know, grow the subscriber base so that they can get some ad dollars going too.
Correct. And they are, they're on Instagram and Facebook. There's somebody that helps manages them, you know, as a volunteer that helps us with that. So yes, absolutely be able to support them on these social media platforms as well.
Great. And how about your restaurant? Where can people order some delicious Malaysian sauces and other, yeah, I see you have a bunch of snacks there as well, right? There's a wide variety. There's like 11 pages worth of stuff to.
Correct. So our website is www.seasonskitchenusa.com. And from our website, you can click the shop online button, and that will take you to our online pantry shop. So yes, we do have specialized goods from Indonesia, Singapore, and Malaysia, which is sort of a region that the flavors of our cuisine are quite similar in these three countries. It's a mix, it's a fusion of Indian, Chinese, and Malay flavors. So, yeah, so that's where they can find us.
Fantastic. Is there, I ask everybody this, so is there anything that I missed that I didn't ask you that you think is important to talk about?
No, actually, I think you were very thorough in covering a lot, and I feel like I was taken, you know, back on memory lane. No, I think you covered everything. You know, I think the key thing is to always stay positive and to share positive vibes. So to look at the world differently, I think, is always a key thing. So like, you know, how you put enabled, disabled. So instead of focusing on disabled, focus on enabled. So once you look at things differently, there's the possibilities are endless and, you know, limitless.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So I really appreciate you taking the time, and thank you so much. I hope that when things get back to normal, we can, and you start doing some of these events again, we can have you back on the show for an update and see how things are going.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.